Thank you. Good morning again, Chief Justice, Your Honors. I am happy to tell the court that the respondent and Mr. Milner both agree, assuming I'm reading the respondent's brief correctly, they both agree that the motion court clearly erred in not granting Mr. Milner an abandonment inquiry where the amended motion was filed late. Under Sanders v. State and Moore v. State, an abandonment inquiry is required because I filed the amended motion out of time. I filed it late because there were two things I wanted to do before filing the amended that I was not able to do. Read plea counsel's file was the first one, and collect all of Mr. Milner's medical records was the second. Ordinarily, that would be fairly easy to do. At the beginning of the representation, my very able assistant sent a letter to plea counsel and asked him to send his file over because it is Mr. Milner's file, it is not counsel's. But we never got a file. And I learned from the Madison County prosecuting attorney that plea counsel had moved. So I had to track plea counsel down through the Missouri bar and find out what happened to the file, which Mr. Milner had advised me also included his medical records. So I had two reasons for wanting to get a hold of those medical records. Because as the court knows, collecting medical records can be very expensive and very time consuming. And I don't have a lot of either, time or money, in filing an amended motion. So I was glad that I could just look at plea counsel's file and get the records that Mr. Milner told me were in there. But when I contacted plea counsel, I discovered that plea counsel had shredded Mr. Milner's file, and including all of the medical records that were in the file. So I had to go and collect the medical records on my own.
At what point did you learn that? Was that after the amended motion was actually moved?
I don't believe so. I don't remember the exact date. I think I have it narrowed down to about two, like one day or the next day. It was before the amended motion was due, but that's when we had to start the process of collecting the medical records. And I was hoping to have the medical records before I filed the amended motion, just because I don't like presenting claims I can't back up with records to the court.
Deadlines are not optional.
They're not.
In the future, you would attempt to file it on time even if you didn't have everything you needed, I presume.
Well.
Or would you purposely abandon the client?
Well, no, obviously not. But the problem with the deadlines is they, especially with these kind of cases, they put you in a bad position.
No, I understand that.
Yes.
But given that you're a rock in a hard place, which would you choose?
The rock, yeah. filing the amended motion and keeping my fingers crossed that I had records to back up what I was saying. Yeah. And I still don't have all the records. There were three hospitals involved. I have two of them. And so I still need to collect some more records on this. And so I still can't read, I still haven't read plea counsel's file because it doesn't exist anymore. So.
But you're not asking this court to hold that justifies filing late, but that's the explanation for why
right.
The client was abandoned.
That would be, I think, for the motion court to determine at the abandonment inquiry, whether I filed the amended motion late because of my difficulties in getting the file and getting the records. Because Mr. Milner couldn't help me with either one of those because he was in DOC at the time.
And so that addresses the trial court. The motion court said it was because he didn't cooperate that you couldn't get them, and you're saying that's not the case.
No, that's not the case at all. I mean, it was difficult for Mr. Milner to cooperate because he was in DOC. And that means that, you know, first you have to send him the HIPAA releases, and then they have to come back, and this is all through folks who are in DOC, as Your Honor knows, they don't have control of, they can't just go to a mailbox and throw the mail in. It's all done through the facility's mail room.
But those would be issues that might come up below if they're
yes.
relevant, but there's nothing in this record to show that he obstructed you from filing it timely.
Quite the contrary. He did everything I asked him to help me get those records. I wouldn't have even known the records were in plea counsel's file if he hadn't told me. So I really can't think of another thing that Mr. Milner could have done in DOC to help me get the records.
So I'm sympathetic to your argument here, but as far as resolving this issue, what is it that the trial court can rely on or required to be heard to find that, one, that there was abandonment, or two, that there was an abandonment because of some negligence on the part of the movement?
Well, the reasons I gave in the Sanders motion would be the motion court starting point.
And I guess that's my question. So can they just rely on the statements that you made in your motion, or do they have to orally hear that in court so there's some other testimonial record, so to speak?
I can't speak generally because I think it would depend on the issues that were before the motion court. And the issues that were before the motion court would have needed some kind of statement from me because ultimately...
Doesn't that rule require a hearing on abandonment?
Well, this court has never really told us how formal... This court has said that the abandonment inquiry only needs to be as formal as it needs to be for the motion court to make that determination as why the amended motion was filed late. Sometimes it's going to need, I think every time it would need post-conviction counsel's testimony. I don't think in every occasion it would need the movement because the reasons I put in the Sanders motion, Mr. Milner wouldn't need to testify to those.
But the trial court found that presumably, that it was the movement's negligence that caused the delay.
His dithering, actually.
Or dithering. So I guess, and it appears, at least from the record, that while there was no hearing, maybe, they relied on the statements in the prosecutor's motion. And so if it's okay to rely on the statements in your motion, is there just something inherently wrong with that? Prosecutor, you didn't know why the prosecutor thought that or what the basis of that is? Or I guess I'm struggling on, what we say. I think we all agree, maybe, but maybe not, that there needs to be an abandonment hearing. But going forward, what does the trial judge need to do? Just have a short hearing and look that way, look that way, and then say, no, I find the differing.
I've seen it handled several ways. Sometimes I'm asked to go under oath, sometimes I'm not. As an officer of the court, it is presumed that what I tell the judge in a Sanders motion is truthful, and I do my best to make sure it is. So the court can rely on what I put in the Sanders motion as an officer of the court. In this case, I don't mean to speak disrespectfully of the respondent at the motion court level, but the respondent really didn't know why the amended motion had been filed late other than what I told him.
Was it really filed late?
Yes, it was, by a couple of months.
Okay. He refused to proceed on the amended motion, but it was filed.
It was filed, yes. It was filed 2 months out of time.
Right. So if there's a determination of abandonment in this case, is the appropriate remedy just to proceed on the amended motion with you being the counsel?
That's my understanding.
And in your view, it doesn't require appointment of new counsel, even though you might be the person who was determined to constitute having abandoned the movement?
I find it difficult to answer because of a recent decision by the Eastern District. Or by the Southern District, I beg your pardon.
Assume it doesn't exist.
Assume it doesn't exist. Okay.
That's what I'm going to assume.
That's very hard for me to say since I'll be filing the motion for rehearing. But
do your best.
Thank you, sir. I think it depends on the grounds that are in the Sanders motion. Because, I really can't. I really don't feel like there's a conflict of interest between me and Mr. Milner because I filed the amended motion late. I don't want to say that, oh, that would never, ever happen. The reason why I have to discuss the other case is because it does involve a conflict of interest, and that's made things more difficult. But I don't think in and of itself filing an amended motion late causes a conflict of interest. To the degree that appointment of counsel is necessary.
It's not the remand for the hearing or proceeding on the amended motion that would require appointment of new counsel. There may be other things like a conflict of interest shown by the record that might require it.
The case I have in mind, the contract counsel discovered when she was well into the case that she had been one of the prosecutors in the underlying criminal cause. Whoops. So she wisely moved to withdraw from the case.
Trial court, I guess my question would be, then should the trial court be asking the movement whether they want current counsel to remain, even though there's been a finding of abandonment? Does that need to happen, or should happen, or should it?
Whether there's a conflict of interest is a question of law. As I understand things, judges decide questions of law, not movements, not attorneys. Abandonment doesn't destroy the attorney-client relationship. It sometimes is a sign to the movement, I am not giving up on this. I am not giving up on you. I am sticking with this case until it is done. And that is a sign of more than competence. So I can't say that just filing an amended motion late causes a conflict.
May it please the court. Although McDaris tells us that an abandonment inquiry can be as formal as or informal as the circuit court wants it to be, what it does require is that the court produce a record from which an appellate court can review and make a determination on whether the motion court got the abandonment inquiry right or wrong.
Well, you sat through some of the court arguments we had here today. Paper all the time. Summary judgments are filed, and it comes up to the court, and we review that. And so there's a record there. It's just there's nothing oral.
Right.
Is that what you're saying? There has to be some oral record there?
No. This case is a good example. What the movement's attorney alleged in the Sanders motion, and that's what we have here, two competing motions. The Sanders motion, where counsel explained why she was unable to file the motion on time. Then we have a motion to dismiss filed by the prosecutor, alleging that, well, if the movement would have just executed releases or got his own records and given them to counsel, then she wouldn't have had to go through all these other. And when you look at that, what Ms. Troop was saying as an officer of the court and putting that in a motion, she alleged information from her own knowledge. The prosecutor, if you look at that motion to dismiss, it just seemed like, and it is, it just looks like speculation. Well, why couldn't the movement have gotten these records? That is a far cry from a motion that would have alleged, here are discrete facts within the prosecutor's knowledge of why the movement had some culpability. And in this case, it appears the motion court just went with what was in the motion to dismiss.
But the prosecutor's motion didn't indicate any personal knowledge of that.
No, did not indicate any personal knowledge, and that's why.
And Ms. Troops did.
And Ms. Troops did, that's right. And I think the value of the way the McDaris footnote suggests that motion courts go about this. In most cases, and I don't know if I can't think of a time when the Attorney General's office filed an appeal from an abandonment determination where the motion court found that there was no abandonment when it were, unless the record absolutely clearly showed that the defendant or the movement had some culpability. When post-conviction counsel says this is what happened, and the motion court believes that that's what happened and finds abandonment, that's pretty much the end of the inquiry. Here we have the opposite situation, and with the motion court basically relying on speculation contained in the motion to dismiss to find that there was no abandonment.
So really then what you're saying is there was an abandonment hearing, but just there wasn't sufficient evidence to support the result or are you saying there wasn't an abandonment?
Here's what, there was not a sufficient record from which this court can review whether the motion court's determination that the movement was culpable for the late filing.
When the motion wasn't filed on the day it was due, a presumption of abandonment arose.
Yes.
And there is nothing in the record to refute the presumption of abandonment.
That's correct. Because the...
So can't we just not remand for abandonment hearing, but say there wasn't enough evidence produced to overcome that presumption, thus they need to proceed on the amended motion?
No, I think that would be premature in this situation because we don't know.
It's only premature if there wasn't a hearing. If what happened constitutes a hearing and there's a presumption of abandonment, then the state has the burden to rebut the presumption, and if they don't, then there was abandonment.
Yeah, that would be true.
I get the feeling that you've looked at this case like there really wasn't a hearing. You don't seem to argue with the fact that sometimes it requires more than others based on the allegations.
And I think it's a chicken and the egg thing. Perhaps there wasn't a sufficient abandonment inquiry because the court made a determination for which there was not a sufficient record to support.
Okay, I understand that.
Okay.
But if we know what the burden of proof is because there's a presumption and the party doesn't carry their burden of proof, why don't they just lose? When it's clear the law is when it's not timely filed, presumption of abandonment.
Right.
At that point in time, the state has to rebut the presumption.
Right.
And if they did, then she would have to put on some evidence to show that what they said or wasn't true. Okay. But if the state chose to rest on their motion, and whatever happened constitutes a hearing, I'm not sure explain to me why the state gets a second bite of the apple based on insufficiency of the record. If they had the responsibility to produce the record to rebut the presumption.
What it appears is there wasn't really an inquiry conducted at all.
Which is different. You're saying there wasn't a hearing in this case.
But I mean, you said it can be so informal. It sounded at first like you were saying there was a hearing, took some evidence, but not others. So how do we decide if there's a hearing or not? Going forward, how would you say we would determine if there's a hearing versus if the court erred in failing to hold a hearing?
If the record is sufficient to enable appellate review of the determination that the motion court came to.
But the question is, here the record has her statement of what she did and nothing opposing it. Where do you make the record? Do you just file something, or does the court have to say, now we're having a hearing? Once she files late, there's this presumption, and you have to have an abandonment hearing, but you're saying there's no required formality for the hearing, so how do we know if what the next thing that happens is a hearing, or does the court have to announce there's going to be a hearing, or do you understand the question going forward here is very important?
Yes, and in this particular case, because the response, the court merely made a decision based on two competing motions that were filed. There was no hearing, there was no oral argument, there was nothing.
And is that always error? Because that's what you sounded like you were saying. You could just file.
It might not be always error.
If it's not always error, who has the obligation to make the record?
Actually, I think the motion court has the obligation to make a record sufficient to support its abandonment determination.
Our prior cases have placed an obligation on the motion court to conduct an independent inquiry.
A sufficient independent inquiry.
Yes, sufficient, yeah. Exactly.
And that's according to the Vogel case.
According to Vogel, it has to be sufficient.
So that's the key word, right? Maybe it wasn't sufficient here.
The state's position is it wasn't sufficient here.
Was it only sufficient if the case, when sufficient? The question was the state declined to put on any evidence, but you don't get to say, no, state, come on, you have to put on evidence. At some point, fine, if the state doesn't want to rebut it, that's the end. Why wasn't that what happened here? If the state chose to just rest on its motion and not to try to...
And that's what we don't know. It was just two motions filed and then a judgment.
You think both parties anticipated there would be something further in this case?
Right. Looking through the record, I would have anticipated there would have been something further.
You assumed that there was going to be some later proceeding and that there wasn't going to be a ruling based on pleading too long.
Right. And once the court did that, now let's say the court would have found abandonment and proceeded on the amended motion. That there is a sufficient record because of what was in the post-conviction attorney's Sanders motion. But when the court makes a ruling on that the movement had some culpability because he didn't supply medical records or medical releases, well, where in the record is that abandonment determination supported? It's not. It's just pleading. It's just an allegation and a motion to dismiss.
That's the problem. If we can infer that the trial judge thought a sufficient inquiry had been held and determined that there had been no abandonment, and we find that's unsupported by the record, we could change that answer and say it was abandonment, proceed on the amended motion. If that's not a fair inference of what the trial court did, then we can't change the answer because we said the answer is invalid because it didn't follow a sufficient inquiry. That's two very different worlds. So is the state saying that in this situation there had to be more inquiry? Or is the state saying that the inquiry here did not support the answer the trial court came to?
It's the latter, Your Honor.
And that absolutely is not the platform from which we would vacate and remand for a hearing on abandonment. We would reverse the determination made on the abandonment from that there hadn't been to that there was and order the court to proceed accordingly.
Only if you... In this case is sort of an anomaly because you don't normally see a motion court unless it is a finding of abandonment based on what's alleged in the Sanders motion that's filed by post-conviction counsel who is the one responsible for the late filing. But this is a strange case because it's based on a motion to dismiss filed by the prosecutor and where the motion court adopts essentially what was speculation. Now, we don't know what if there is any evidence or what evidence there might be. That's why where the state's position here is that there needs to be a sufficient inquiry, and this wasn't sufficient to support the motion court's determination that there was no abandonment.
And there's got to be a sufficient record for us or any appellate court to review to determine whether or not the trial court's decision was clearly erroneous.
Correct. And you cannot review this record and say that the movement here had culpability because he didn't supply records or he didn't supply releases or he refused to turn over records. That there's just not enough in this record to support that determination.
And if it had been instead of a motion to dismiss, but response to the Sanders motion, would there be a better argument that there was sufficient record?
No. If it was just titled differently and contained the same allegations, no, because the allegations in the motion to dismiss were simply speculative. Just reading them, you can tell that there is no knowledge, that there's no evidence that's cited or pleaded in the motion to support. But really is a speculative inference. The motion court was led into error by relying on the speculative inference without making that a sufficient inquiry to support that determination.
Is there anything in the record, what is in the record to support that the neither party was requesting a hearing? Anything?
No, I don't see it.
Or that the prosecutor didn't have evidence.
Nothing, and there's nothing for that either. It's just...
The motion doesn't say prosecutor has no evidence to present so that the trial court had some reason to just consider the pleadings.
Right.
Again, you think both of the lawyers thought there was going to be some sort of hearing prior to a ruling?
Well, yes. What I don't want to do is say that McDerris, that there needs to be a formal hearing, because I don't think that's necessary, and it wouldn't have been necessary in this case if the motion court would have found abandonment based on what Ms. Drew pleaded in her Sanders motion. No, we're not here today.
But I don't want to get to the spot where we think the trial court ruled incorrectly on the issue of abandonment and just remand for a more sufficient abandonment hearing. You know what I'm saying? I mean, if there's not enough evidence to support the judge's finding, then you shouldn't be sending it back to tell them, do it again and just do it sufficient.
And that might be putting the cart before the horse, because you got to have the inquiry before making that determination. And that there just was...
If the state had deduced, 4.5 days of evidence supporting what they set out in their motion, then would a finding of no abandonment be supported by that record?
Yeah, well, yes, there would be something to support that finding.
You're saying there was no contrary evidence, there was nothing to overcome the presumption. I mean, the only evidence was that the state didn't produce anything to overcome the presumption, and the attorney did present evidence consistent with the presumption.
But there wasn't any opportunity. There's a motion. There's these two motions,
you're
and then the court rules.
There was no inquiry. On this, looking at this record, there was no inquiry, and the decision was made prior to any inquiry.
That's exactly what that's our position. There needed to be an inquiry.
And our question is, if there was a partial inquiry but insufficient, you don't get a second try. But if there was no inquiry, you get a first one.
Right. If it's not an inquiry, if there's not sufficient record to support the abandonment determination.
Well, sure,
and the
there
determination
is. Just,
here was...
It's just the wrong determination based on... if the state chooses not to put on any evidence, are we... You could send it back down for an inquiry, and the state could say, I rely on the record already made, and then it would just be a right or wrong decision based on that record.
If that's the case, I think that's the prudent way to handle... Let the motion court make the determination, but the motion court and all motion courts need to know that an inquiry needs to be made. If you're going to make a ruling on abandonment, you need to have a sufficient record. And pleadings, a motion to dismiss that speculates that perhaps the movement could have done something to get his medical record sooner, that's not a sufficient record to support a finding.
Is there anything in the motion court's order that indicates the motion court is ruling on the facts alleged in the is ruling on facts relevant to the abandonment issue?
In the court's order?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, the court.
I'm looking at the order, and all I see is. There was not an amended motion filed. They filed a leave to file it. State objected to it. Was there anything where the indicates the court ruled on the merits of an abandonment claim?
In its judgment, when it says when it found no abandonment, and then it found that there were no allegations to support the pro se claims in the initial motion, that was the. That was
but,
the determination.
But no factual rulings. I'm missing that in the record. So.
No, it just basically adopts what the motion to dismiss said, that the movement could have done something sooner. Ms. Stroop's telling me that there was an argument on the abandonment. From the docket sheet, it just says arguments heard. I guess it's not clear to me that it was on the abandonment issue. I mean, she would know. I guess she was there. But you know, if that was the case, and the state had the opportunity, and that was the inquiry, then yeah, I would change what I was saying before.
Right.
However, from what the record that I saw and can tell from the docket sheets, that the motion court just made this ruling based on the motions basically passing each other in the night.
Thank you, counsel.
I hate to do this because I did not want to take this much time. On just to answer your question, Chief Justice Fisher, on the conflict of interest, when an amended motion is filed late, Sanders applies. You, if there's abandonment, you proceed on the late filed motion. Thank you.
I'm sorry. I need to make sure that neither my opposing counsel nor the court is laboring under a misconception. There was argument on the state's motion, on the respondent's motion to dismiss. It was not on the record. And the problem with the respondent's motion to dismiss, it was double layered. Because not only did it say that that Mr. Milner had been responsible for the late filing of the amended motion, it also argued that the court should not proceed on the points in the pro se motion because they were not cognizable. So there were.
You wouldn't get to the pro se motion unless you already found that there wasn't abandonment.
Right.
Well,
yes.
That's pretty clear from the court's judgment. That's what it did. Because
yes.
It went ahead and ruled on the pro se motion.
Yes, it did.
It would not have done that absent it thinking that that was the hearing it was providing.
Exactly. Yeah, but I just didn't want.
Now, when you started this argument, you said both of you agreed that there should have been an abandonment hearing.
Yes.
And now you're saying there was an abandonment hearing.
It wasn't characterized as an abandonment inquiry. We were arguing on the respondent's motion to dismiss. And that's why I have difficulty calling it an abandonment inquiry, because we were also arguing about the court's. Not only did I disagree with the motion court about Mr. Milner being responsible for the late filing, I also disagreed that the motion court should have been able to dismiss the case just by looking at Mr. Milner's claims and deciding they were not cognizable. I disagreed with both decisions by the motion court. So we were arguing like both levels at the hearing. Nobody called it an abandonment inquiry. The respondent's motion to dismiss kind of threw a monkey wrench into things procedurally, but it did. But I probably said the same things at the hearing on the motion to dismiss that I would have said during an abandonment inquiry. But we were also arguing about, because the respondent didn't just ask that the amended motion not be regarded by the court, it was also asking that Mr. Milner's pro se claims be dismissed. So we had a lot to argue about.
But the question is whether that event, whatever it was a sufficient opportunity for the state to either adduce evidence or say it had no evidence.
There was no evidence adduced, I mean, obviously. But
if they had a chance and they didn't do it, then the answer is that the abandonment or the no abandonment determination was unsupported and ought to be reversed. If that
right.
wasn't a fair opportunity to make that record, then the answer is let's go back and have an abandonment.
Yeah, I can't call what we did an abandonment inquiry because that's not what I considered it. I was trying to keep the case from going away.
But it sounds like the court and the prosecutor treated it like it was the abandonment inquiry, but there was no announcement that it would be there.
I would agree with that. Yeah.
Thank you. You're out of time.